The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Since the beginning, it seems, Peggy Lynn Howard's life was rife with turmoil. She was born on February 7, 1973, in Folkston, Georgia, to Wanda Smith, but early on, Peggy was given up for adoption, along with her sister, Rhonda. Evidence suggests that Peggy and Rhonda suffered abuse at the hands of their biological father, and their biological mother would later vaguely remark that their father used them against her. Wanda Smith didn't want to give her girls up, but her family refused to help her, and she felt she couldn't properly care for them. Peggy and Rhonda were adopted by St. George, Georgia residents O.D. and Nell Rollerson, and they became Peggy and Rhonda Rollerson. But Wanda says that she maintained a close relationship with the girls, saying that she often spoke with them, quote, sometimes two or three times a night, just to talk. Rhonda described her sister Peggy as spirited. Though she was small, Rhonda said, her attitude was anything but. It isn't known if Peggy and Rhonda's life growing up with the Rollersons was troubled, but after Peggy went off on her own as a young adult, trouble indeed found her. The details of Peggy Lynn Howard's life are few and far in between, presumably because she'd been adopted. When she was 19 years old, Peggy gave birth to a daughter, Alyssa. Though she was married to a man named Brian Howard, becoming Peggy Lynn Howard, he doesn't appear to have been Alyssa's father. The exact date that Peggy and Brian Howard tied the knot is unclear, but what is known is the fact that even before Alyssa was born, the couple's relationship was tumultuous, to say the least. Howard was almost 10 years older than Peggy, but his criminal record appears to have kicked up a notch after the two became involved. Peggy doesn't appear to have been participating in his criminal escapades, as her record is clean other than a few traffic violations. Howard's record included burglary, grand theft, trafficking stolen property, and assault, and at one point he even escaped from detention in a Florida jail. In November of 1991, trouble in the couple's relationship was escalating. That month, Brian Howard was charged with domestic violence against Peggy, and was eventually charged with armed kidnapping and two counts of attempted murder as the nature of the incident became clearer. Peggy was one of the targets, and though the details are elusive, Brian Howard was charged, convicted, and incarcerated for the attempts. The other victim is unknown. It's not difficult to theorize the scenario that led to these convictions, though it would be unnecessarily presumptuous to speak on it. For several years following the incident, Howard was in and out of prison, and he and Peggy went back and forth on divorce proceedings. A divorce, however, never happened, but Peggy certainly moved on. Sometime later, Peggy began a new relationship. Her new boyfriend persuaded her to move with him to Houston, Texas from Florida, where she'd been living. Peggy had no family in Houston and presumably knew no one there, so when her relationship with the man she'd moved there to be with failed, it was likely hard on the young mother. After the breakup, she and 6-year-old Alyssa moved into the Brandy Creek condominium complex in West Houston. Brandy Creek was gated, and Peggy and Alyssa's unit was located on the 3900 block of Tanglewild Street. After living in the condo for only 2 months, on the morning of Monday, October 26, 1998, Peggy Lynn Howard was killed outside her home. That morning, at approximately 7:20 a.m., Peggy Lynn Howard exited her condo. She was on her way to drop off Alyssa at school before heading to work, and the two walked out hand in hand. As she walked past her Toyota in the carport toward the trash bin to dispose of a bag of garbage she was carrying, a man stepped out from behind the storage divider that separated Peggy's carport from the next-door neighbor's. 6-year-old Alyssa saw the man pulling his hand from his pocket, holding a gun, and screamed, "No," as he stepped behind her mother, pointed the pistol at her, and fired. As Peggy fell to the ground, Alyssa quickly crawled under her mother's Toyota. The man walked around Peggy and shot her again. Alyssa bolted out from under the vehicle, panicked and screaming. She ran up and down the sidewalks, pounding on nearby doors for help, until one resident took the young girl inside to calm her. Authorities were alerted, and an ambulance transported Peggy to Ben Taub Hospital, where she was pronounced dead. Peggy's killer is thought to have entered the gated Brandy Creek condos through a side door, not the main entrance into the community. Others besides 6-year-old Alyssa also witnessed the gunman. As he fled the scene, witness Willie Walker observed the shooter stuffing something into his jacket as he passed through the security gate. The perpetrator was Hispanic, witnesses said. He was slim, around 5 feet 2 inches tall, and wore a dark-colored baseball cap over his medium-length hair. The shooter also wore a green and purple starter jacket. Though he was described as having a thin mustache, the perpetrator wasn't a man at all, witnesses said. They estimated his age range from 12 to 15 years old. Waiting for the gunman just outside the entrance of the complex was a young man in a late 1980s black two-door Chevrolet Cavalier. What was described as a minor dent on the vehicle's front left quarter panel was perhaps the car's only defining feature. As the gunman neared the getaway vehicle, the driver flung open the door, the shooter jumped in, and the two sped off. 20 years later, Houston Police Cold Case Detective Paul Vella remarked, "I'm not going to say it's a hit, but it was not random." Because their primary witness was only 6 years old, Houston Homicide Sergeant Dave Calhoun enlisted the help of Harris County Children's Protective Services to elicit information from Alyssa. CPS agents remarked that the young girl was extremely articulate and more than capable of clearly describing what had taken place. Alyssa told her interviewers that the shooter, who never spoke a word, was young and had brownish hair. She recollected her mother's murder and gave Sergeant Calhoun a picture of the man she'd drawn on yellow construction paper. "He was a bad man," Alyssa told him. Meanwhile, Harris County Child Protective Services told the press that they were forced to place Alyssa into the care of a foster family because they were having difficulty reaching her and Peggy's family. Since they'd only lived at the Brandy Creek condominiums for 2 months, neighbors there were unable to provide insight into Peggy Howard and her daughter. Alyssa was doing well, all things considered, a CPS spokesperson said immediately following the death of her mother, though they remarked that it was likely because what had happened hadn't set in. As the days went on, Sergeant Calhoun told reporters Alyssa was not doing well. "Whenever a visitor comes to the apartment where the young girl is staying with her foster family," he said, "Alyssa runs to a closet and hides." CPS caseworkers noted that while she knows her mother has been killed, she hadn't seemed to accept the fact that she'll never be back. They also added that young Alyssa has not been very protected and that she'd seen a lot in her 6 years of life. A CPS worker accompanied the little girl to her mother's funeral. A week after Peggy was shot and killed, a relative of Alyssa's was located and arrangements began being made to turn her over to family. Custody of the 6-year-old, however, became complicated even beyond the fact that none of Peggy and Alyssa's family members lived in Texas. The whereabouts of Alyssa's father were unknown, and issues arose when both Peggy's biological family and adopted family insisted that she wouldn't be safe with the other side. Texas District Judge Pat Shelton ordered Harris County CPS to investigate Alyssa's adoptive grandmother, biological grandmother, and maternal aunt. We can't just automatically, arbitrarily place a child with someone in another state, Judge Shelton told both sides of the family. These things take time. Since biological and adoptive family members resided in Georgia, Florida, and Washington State, Judge Shelton said he'd allow verbal reports from CPS agencies in those jurisdictions to hopefully expedite the process. Alyssa's grandmothers and her aunt, Peggy's sister Rhonda, were all ordered to appear before Judge Shelton in a state district courtroom in Houston for hearings on the matter. Eventually, Alyssa was placed under the guardianship of family in Florida. As far as the investigation went, things were moving at a snail's pace. Though presumably not news to the first responders or investigators, an autopsy revealed that Peggy Howard was shot twice, once in her head and once on the left side of her back. She wasn't robbed, the gunman had taken nothing, and police struggled to put together a motive for the shooting. Sergeant Calhoun remarked that it was obvious the killer was purposely lying in wait in the carport to ambush someone, though he said he wasn't sure if he was waiting for Peggy specifically or if she just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. This seemed to suggest that investigators were keeping open the possibility that Peggy's shooting may have been the result of some type of gang initiation. It wasn't a far stretch. Houston Mayor Bob Lanier had put an anti-gang office and task force together in 1994 in response to an alarmingly high rate of gang violence and crime. The anti-gang office geo-mapped and tracked the areas where most of the violence was happening, and much of it was in southwest Houston, not far from where Peggy and Alyssa lived. The June 1993 murders of teenaged friends Elizabeth Christine Pena and Jennifer Louise Ertman at the hands of gang members played a major role in the city's decision to create the task force. Jennifer and Elizabeth came across several individuals with gang affiliations as they walked along White Oak Bayou. There were six of them, and they brutally and repeatedly raped the two girls before strangling them to death. As detectives looked further into Peggy Lynn Howard's personal life, however, another theory took center stage. They discovered her ex-husband Brian Howard's attempts to kill her. Howard was currently doing time, which complicated things as far as theorizing his involvement in what appeared to be a hit on Peggy. If he was responsible for her murder, he'd have to have hired or convinced someone to do it for him from behind bars. Complicating things further was the fact that Peggy had several past love interests that Houston detectives had to sort through. Beyond even that, the Houston Police Department received dozens of tips, including one that was, apparently, deemed important. At a press conference, Houston Homicide Sergeant Dave Calhoun pleaded for one tipster in particular to call back. On Wednesday, October 28th, just 2 days after Peggy's murder, Sergeant Calhoun had received a call that only lasted seconds, but provided what he deemed solid information. In his plea, he insisted that the caller need not give his name, but stressed the importance that the caller reach back out. The information the caller provided isn't known, nor is whether or not they called back. On the day they received this tip, the Houston Police Department released a composite sketch of the suspected gunman. The question of who shot Peggy Howard and why has yet to be answered, and the case is long cold. Her family has expressed in the media their anguish and frustration as a result in the few articles that have been published. Rhonda told a reporter that while her faith allows her to forgive her sister's killer, it's not something she can forget. Perhaps there was a reason in the mind of the shooter, Rhonda said, but nothing could justify taking the life of a sister, daughter, and mother. The media also reached out to Alyssa nearly 20 years later, who, like her mother at the time she died, was 25 years old. Alyssa wore an amethyst necklace, Peggy's birthstone, in both memory of her and as a reminder that justice for her mother is yet to be realized. There are times when I have emotional breakdowns and I just cry and I want her, and there are other times where her memory pushes me to be stronger, a grown Alyssa, who now had a family of her own, said. Still, though, she desperately longs for answers. I want to know why. Was it jealousy? Was it spite? Were you paid? If you have any information about the murder of Peggy Lynn Howard, please call the Crime Stoppers hotline at 800-252-8477. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and $2.50 a month gives you access to Patreon-exclusive episodes that cover mostly solved crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, including episodes detailing Fort Worth's thrill killers and the Odessa lust murderer. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. It's a huge help with the costs associated with producing the show, and Erica and I appreciate it beyond words. The Houston Chronicle, the Houston Press, and KHOU.com were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.